You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
The stage is set. The destination, New York City. The field of battle, Rockin' Riley's Pub. The grand prize, Fantasy Baseball Glory. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network's coverage of Tout Wars continues now.
Back, Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Studio 34. It's Tout Wars weekend, continuing the coverage all day long. Tony Cincotta sitting in with us for the next hour. It's George and I. Matt Modica is off to his NFBC main event draft. Tony competed in an NFBC auction last night around 6 o'clock. And we'll continue to get his thoughts on that draft and others surrounding the world of sports. But I would say that the RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package is where you need to be. It's available for 2017 right now. Stay ahead of the competition with in-depth articles and insights from our award-winning analysts like Georgia and Tony. Prepare for your draft with our new and improved cheat sheet generator. Get access to fully sortable projections and over 800 player profiles. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount on the RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package.
I wrote a book this year.
You did?
No, I wrote one chapter.
You did, and George wrote a chapter too, right? So what happens is Benny Riccardi, who is the master of the book, right, sort of the chief editor and the chief aggregator of the content, what if he goes off to make like $5 million on the book? Well, are you guys cutting into
that? I get 2% of that, thank you.
I get 5% of that.
Very nice.
Because I wrote the first chapter, so I wanted more. I was holding out.
Got it.
It was started out at 8.
Yeah. It's like a reverse auction.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you nothing but
so
luck.
So far I got 5% of nothing. But the book is doing very well, actually. Just Benny hasn't given me any money.
All right. Well,
he's in Miami, though.
He's vacationing in Miami.
Yeah. He's in Miami, though. I don't know if there's any relevance to this thing here.
What is it called? The Definitive Guide to Baseball, right?
Yeah, Definitive Guide to Fantasy Baseball. 21 different experts in the fantasy baseball industry, including George Kurtz, Nando DeFino, Joe Pisapia, you can hear on this network. Everybody had a chapter unique to them.
What was your chapter?
Mine was actually the statistical numbers that you need to be successful in each category in rotisserie baseball. I think a lot of people don't even know how to... I'd say if people play fantasy baseball, they don't even know how to win.
No.
And it's the craziest thing. So when I go into a draft, what I do is I'll find the type of league I'm in. Like that for that auction yesterday, I'll go back to the last 2 years, and I'll find out how many home runs it took to come in third place, how many runs scored it took to third base, how many RBIs. As I'm doing the draft, I'm writing down the projections for each player, and I'm making sure, like, I want to hit 300 home runs yesterday. I want 160 stolen bases. And I'm tracking my progress through that. I want to get 90 saves. I want to get, I forget what it was, 101 wins.
Do you try like hell or high water? You got to get to those numbers? Or yeah. You understand that you're going to sacrifice this category versus this category?
No, I don't want to sacrifice any category. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I didn't do good in batting average yesterday, but that was not my intent. And I got to figure something out once the year goes. I just don't think when you compete at that level.
Can you make trades in that league?
No trades.
Okay.
You can. You just can't give away a category. Players are too good. You can't give away 13 points to somebody.
Yeah.
I don't. I never punt the category. Not on purpose. It may happen where the way I drafted, okay, I punted it, but not on purpose. I think it's crazy. Maybe you get away with that in home leagues, but in leagues where people know what they're doing, it's not going to work out.
What chapter did you write for the book?
I wrote pretty much how to win your home league. I also wrote a part of that chapter on what Tony's describing about. I do the same thing. I think Tony said 300 home runs. Anybody can look. If your league's been around for 4 or 5 years, you should be taking an average of how much it takes to win each category. It's not that hard to do. Mm-hmm. But even if you're starting a brand new league, you can look on Yahoo, you can look on ESPN, you know, look up a Google search, and you can find out 10-team league, 5x5, how much it takes to win each category. And then you do that. There's 300 home runs to win your category. You draft Miguel Cabrera. You have him penciled in for 35 home runs. Well, now you need 265 home runs to win that category. And you just go on down like that. It's not hard to do. It's simple math. And it'll give you an idea of what you're short on and what you may have too much on in every category.
It's important, though, if you play in a home league, to use those numbers first. Because a lot of these home leagues set up or have some keepers involved, and it distorts the values of the league. Like, say some guys get Mike Trout for $1. He picked 5 years ago, and he's able to keep him at $1, or it goes up $3 or $5 every year, and so he's still getting him at $16. Those distort the category numbers there. So if you're in your home league, and those stats are available, use those. Don't just use any generic 12-team league out there. Use what's in your own league.
Got it. And just selfish purposes, how would you say that, do any of these strategies that you're talking about or these preparation techniques change if it's a head-to-head league? Is there any manner in which you have to really mix things up? Or are you still ultimately looking for the totals by year's end?
No. A head-to-head league is totally different. Now, it depends on the type of format. So most head-to-head leagues, you'll play categories, right? So you'll have a run scored category, mm-hmm. an RBIs category. I have a totally different philosophy there. So what I'm going to do is I'm not going to pick any stolen bases. I'm not going to pick any saves. And I'm going to try to win 7-3 every week.
Yeah.
I would never do that in a rotisserie style. But just pick home run hitters with big averages early in the draft. A lot of people will pick pitchers early in the draft, too, top flight pitchers, and try to nail those categories. So you can go that route, too.
You can go heavy on closers,
too. To me, I feel like I'll just go and get all the home run hitters that steal bases with good averages early in the draft. And then pitching-wise, I get two things. One, I can go ahead and I can take some marginal pitches, and then I can also two-star pitches people to death each week. And so it's easy to me in head-to-head to cheat on pitching. So I go with the hitters.
He's right. I mean, I think there's more than one way to go about that, but I've done that as well. You can. It's easier, I guess, to punt the categories because you only need to win six.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. You won.
Guy that won my head-to-head league last year was loaded at closer.
So he's kept going his for ratios saves, down. ERA, and whip.
He blew everybody out in saves. His ratios were great, and he was just winning pitching that's, categories.
Because you're only going to win 3-2 then.
Conceivably, but I mean, his team overall was good. I think his drafting strategy was to hit the closers hard because he had kept some legitimate hitters.
If you think about it, George, though, that strategy can work because you can pick first five rounds all hitters, right?
And go, yeah.
You pick the first closer in round six, you're getting a top three closer, right? So you nail a couple of those out there. So even if you do win your pitching categories 3-2 and your offense is strong, you win.
You're winning, probably win 6-4, 7-3 again, yeah. I like head-to-head. I don't play in many of them, but I do enjoy head-to-head.
A lot of leagues, though, won't let you get away with that because there'll be a minimum innings per limit. Week.
Yeah.
This
league's just, guys, it's like throwing up against the wall. There's so many categories. There's not a lot. It's a lot of loose rules.
I played in my uncle's league. He had a 10-by-10. It was psychotic.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even bother. I'm like, I'm just going best player I need here.
That's all you can do. I tell people all the time, when you add categories, it really dilutes the ability to research and makes it, I wouldn't say fair, but make it lucky for anyone can basically win. Because there's no way in 10 categories that you could sit there and put a matrix together. Like, we'd have to get one of these rich, geeky Ivy League kids that do well at DFS to get us an algorithm to figure this stuff out.
Do we know any guys like that?
Oh, yeah, we got a few of them running around.
I think my problem was when you add extra categories, especially on the hitters categories, I think one of my issues is that a lot of those categories are geared towards the power hitters again. You know, and I think that's a problem. They're geared towards power. So you're just rewarding the guys who hit 40 home runs. Slugging percentage would help power guys. Total base helps power guys. That's one thing I don't like about adding too many extra categories. It generally rewards the guys who are going to hit home runs.
Yeah. So regarding your team yesterday, do you feel like there's one? I mean, you said batting average was something that you feel like you failed a little bit in. It's going to be hard to chase that, obviously, on the waiver wire. But any other players that you were just kind of, at that point in the draft, either desperate to take or somebody that you were super excited that you got at a certain point?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. When you're in an auction, right, I think discipline comes in a huge fact. Like, there was a team, a guy I know, and I won't throw him under the bus. He basically went out there and he threw four, like, $40 players. And he sat there for 2 hours before he could bid. Can you imagine being in an auction or a draft and just sitting there and everybody's bidding and you can't do a damn thing?
And it hurts you because you're not part of the mix, right?
Yeah.
You can't get into a rhythm.
No, and it didn't work out for him, and I don't think his team's that good. And he did very good last year, and I think he just got caught up in it. And it was a bad move on his part. Seems not that bad, but it's not going to win. And I don't know if anything could help. The one guy that I didn't have, this is the most interesting, the one guy I didn't have any anticipation drafting, and I don't have him on any other team, but I feel like he's being really underrated, is the Padres' Will Myers. And he was $24. It was 23, and I went 24 on him. I'm like, man, he's too much of a bargain. Anytime I get 20 steals, like, this guy's Paul Goldschmidt light. Like, Goldschmidt's home run numbers have been declining. Will Myers has only done it for 1 year, so you can only say that. Will Myers is, though, a top prospect when he came up in the league.
He was.
Yeah, Tampa
organization. He's actually said he's going to hit 40-40 this year himself. We don't believe it, but, I mean, it tells you the confidence the guy has. And I'm like, I don't have this guy on any team. So I bid 24 on him, which changed my strategy a little bit. And I got another guy that I never got. In the outfield, I took A.J. Pollock, too, because I had a home run hitting guy in Myers that gets stolen bases. I said, give me another one stolen bases, and I want to get these 2020 guys there at that time. So Pollock is a guy, too, in a good Arizona offense that I threw in there. And those two guys, I never draft.
Well, Will Myers played 157 games last year, George, so obviously he's getting playing time in 28 and 28. What are your thoughts on him this year?
I like Myers, but I don't love him. I guess maybe I want to see him. What do I always like to say? I like to see guys do it again. When you have one beer, do it again. Myers is a little different because he's not a rookie. He's not a first-year guy. He's been around a while. Perhaps I think sometimes we forget that baseball is very hard to play. So it's because the guy wasn't as successful as we thought he was going to be. And Myers, as Tony said, was a top prospect. And he didn't play well right away. You know, and now maybe he's figured it out now. He's going to be that superstar, especially Lono San Diego needs it. So I'm not shying away from him. But before I pay that price, I'm probably going to need to see him do it again. I like Pollock a lot.
So here's what happened with Pollock. Is I wanted Charlie Blackman in that spot, right? So Blackman went for crazy money. Went for like $39. And I said, you know what? Who gives me the closest stats to Charlie Blackman? So basically I had a team on paper. So now I go, who gives me close to the stats? If everything goes right, it's A.J. Pollock. Yeah. He's the closest to Charlie Blackman that's out there. So I got him for $9 less than Charlie Blackman.
Pollock's a Pollock. I'm going to worry about the injury. Stay healthy.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's been fluky. The elbow thing at home plate, that's fluky. You know, I'm not going to call him injury prone, but I like Pollock because he has all the skills and he plays in that ballpark and that ball flies out of there.
So my question on Will Myers, to just kind of review him for a second. Obviously, he wins Rookie of the Year a few years ago. It's his fourth year in the majors. He had five, then six, then five stolen bases in his first three seasons, and then he explodes for 28 last year. Maybe it's a requisite result of him having all this extra playing time, but I think Will Myers seemed to get beat up a little bit in the press about attitude, about him being a stat chaser. Do you think that's true?
Oh, yeah, it's 100% true. When the guy comes out...
He says he's going to be 40-40. He's obviously a stat chaser.
Yeah, he's not going to say, hey, I hope we win 68 games this year, because that's probably what he's in. And it's a business to him. And I like that from a fantasy perspective, that he came out and said 44. It tells me the stolen bases weren't a fluke, that he's going
to
actually go... He
wants to run.
He wants to run. He's going for it. And it leads me to believe, as crazy it is, and I'm a guy that hates narratives, and I like everything to be statistically based.
Yeah.
But when I hear that, I kind of like that with Myers.
Well, what do you want me to say? Oh, listen, I don't know. I don't feel like running this year. His team's terrible. Maybe we'll hit a couple of home runs.
But 40-40 is a big nugget to throw out there.
He's not doing 40-40.
No, but
I guess he's 30-30.
The last guy to throw it out there was Matt Kemp, I think. I remember him saying the same thing one time.
Kemp was much better last year than people give him credit for.
Oh, he's been better the last 2 years. Like, people write him off. It's crazy.
Because he's not in shape. He doesn't look good. And even the Braves admitted he was too heavy last year, but the man hit fine.
Yeah, we've seen that with a couple of guys, right? We had a similar conversation earlier this morning, and I'll get your thoughts on this, Tony, about Victor Martinez. The guys are just saying, he's DH only. Can he be healthy? Well, I was saying to George, well, the fact that he's a DH now probably keep him healthier.
I'll tell you what, I'm shocked at this guy. I've been waiting for him to fall apart for 2 years now. And he's kept it in somehow, and he keeps playing. And you're right. I'll never forget this conversation I had with Cliff Floyd. People don't realize how hard it is to be a DH. Your whole life, you play baseball. You hit, and you go out in the field. Hit, and go out in the field. Cliff didn't know what to do.
Between
innings. And he couldn't hit. He said it really affected his hitting because he wasn't just used to sit there. He didn't feel like he was part of the game.
Yeah,
he didn't feel like he was part of the team. And he couldn't do it.
Couldn't get into rhythm.
Yeah, and Victor Martinez, this guy has gotten better. This guy is defying Father Time. I've been waiting for him to fall apart. I wouldn't have drafted this guy ever in the last 3 years, and I'm more willing to draft him than ever. And I'll tell you what happens, too. If you get in an auction and you guys have a shot to go and get Victor Martinez or Kendrys Morales, bid with them the first bid. Throw it out there. Nobody wants to tie up that utility position. It's the dumbest thing in the world. So you get a bargain on these two guys each and every time. I tried it yesterday. The one guy hung in there with me. So on Kendrys Morales, I think he hits 30 home runs in Toronto. I mean, Kansas City is one of the toughest ballparks. I think in the history of Kansas City, the all-time single-season home run leader is Steve Balboni. It's like 33.
Yeah, that ballpark's a canyon. But Skydome, whatever they're calling it nowadays, is a bandbox. That ball flies out of there. I agree on Morales. I think he's going to have a monster season, especially in that lineup there. And I agree with you about DH. I have no problem. I used to have David Ortiz on all my team because no one wanted to tie it up.
Yeah, I got him for $10 last year. And a couple
That's a joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke.
Should have been the most valuable player.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll be back with Tony Cincotta. You can catch Tony on Twitter at TheTonyCincotta. So we'll be back with Tony, George, and myself after this. Back on the Roto Experts in the Morning, Mike Blewett, George Kurtz, and Tony Cincotta. The band's back together. Doing shows together for a long time. Do various shows now. And we're happy to be here. And Tony's going to take you after this, when we stop at 10 o'clock, Tony's going to take you up to the next 3 hours. But you're basically going to be on air all day, yes?
Yeah, I was listening to you guys on the way in.
Okay.
I like the Colin, the Colin Kaepernick.
I was actually just going to ask you that question. So
yeah.
I'll give you the floor, your thoughts about Colin Kaepernick. Like, is this just him biding his time to figure out what the best spot for him is, or is there blowback?
Oh, there's definitely blowback.
Few teams.
But I think
it's not a league-wide blowback, in my opinion.
I don't think it's a league-organized
blowback. He's not blackballed.
But here's the problem. It's the Tim Tebow situation for the different reason. If you've got a backup quarterback, it's not worth the trouble. It's not worth answering the questions for a backup quarterback about the national anthem and stand up. And he took a choice, and everybody has the freedom to do what he did. But he has the freedom to feel the repercussions, too.
Absolutely.
And that's what he's getting.
Agreed.
And he should have thought about this, and he should have known about this. When you're a backup quarterback, there's no way in hell any team's going to let that happen and answer questions about
he's
that.
He's done stuff like to gain attention before. He used to wear those socks that were making fun of the police officers.
Yeah.
So he's done stuff like this before. This went, once again, when he was a backup.
If you're a starting-level quarterback, you get away with this. No backup's going to get away with this.
I agree with that in theory, but couldn't I also argue that Colin Kaepernick is better than some of the starters out there? He's waiting for a starting job to open up, which I actually don't think is going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know who it
is. Barring an injury.
I don't know who it would be anymore. Like I would take Josh McCown ahead of him. Like,
you would?
Yeah, Kaepernick's played the last couple of years. To me, he's been terrible.
Yeah, but last year his touchdown-interception ratio was actually positive for him. I still don't think he's an accurate quarterback. You know me. I've not historically been on the Colin Kaepernick playing bandwagon. Forget the protest. I've not been on the bandwagon. I just don't think it's totally accurate.
I thought it was pretty good, actually. I mean, he was almost won the Super Bowl.
That's the problem.
The play's gone downhill every year.
But that's the problem. Like, I always come back to Kaepernick was this close to winning a Super Bowl.
Like, if anyone can contemplate using Blaine Gabbert instead of you,
something wrong.
And really think about that, that's a problem.
I still can't explain that. It seems like Chip Kelly was
motivated.
Kaepernick
may not have been healthy at the early part.
He had a dead arm situation in July,
August.
The
shoulder surgery, so that may play a part in that.
But, I mean, he blew Gabbert out, which isn't hard to do. He blew Gabbert out of the water.
I would hope so.
As far as play was concerned on the field. He played okay last year. But, unfortunately, I don't think there's any starting jobs. I personally think he's biding his time. He wants to find the right fit. Could that be Houston if Romo doesn't come together? Yes.
I don't think they're going to go for him.
I don't know that Bill O'Brien's a huge fan.
Even if Romo doesn't go there. O'Brien would have a heart attack. And I don't.
He's going to have a heart attack anyway. Bill O'Brien's one of the most stressed out coaches I've ever seen.
Yeah, but Kaepernick will give him a stroke then. It's just not going to work.
Well, what'll be crazy is if he doesn't want Kaepernick, and for the second year in a row they force a guy on him.
I don't think John Elway's taking a guy that doesn't stand for the National.
They almost did.
I don't see
last,
that.
They did. Last summer. It was before the protest.
Before that. But they got Trevor Siemian now. Isn't he better than Kaepernick?
No.
I don't know.
I don't think that.
I think it's close.
I don't think that.
The bottom line, too, is Denver, they still have a first-round pick that they got to play, right? Eventually, like, you can't.
Paxton Lynch.
It'd be a one-year deal for Kaepernick in Denver.
But don't you, I mean, if you're Denver, you're playing to win this year, right? Because that defense is not going to be great. You're going to lose these guys to the cap. So you got to get a quarterback in there.
Yeah.
They're going to get Tony Romo, even though everybody says that he's not going there.
I've always thought it would be Denver.
I think it's Houston.
Denver's doing the right thing.
I don't think they are.
They won't even talk to Dallas, they said, and they won't even talk about it until they cut him. Like, they're forcing Jerry.
But that's the problem.
Jerry's put himself in a bad situation, I think.
I don't think Dallas should trade him, because salary cap, it wouldn't be good for Dallas. And you're not going to get a good enough pick in return to make it worth it.
No. You're not going to get
any. What's the harm in waiting, though?
There is no harm.
I think what he's doing is he promised Tony Romo that he would take care of him and everything like that.
What can he really do, though?
He can cut him.
He can cut him.
And let him go to wherever he wants
will
to.
Anyway.
He already promised to do that, by the way.
That's what I mean. I think he's delaying the inevitable. I think Houston and Denver both are calling his bluff. Houston's already made the cap room, yet they still won't trade for him.
But isn't that the problem? One of these two teams in January is going to be like, oh, I should have given up that fourth round pick for Romo. Because they're not going to be going deep in the playoffs. Romo's going to, if he's alive back then, which is a big question, will be in the playoffs. That's why I think one of these two teams will have made a mistake. He will go to one, and one will win, and one will lose.
Do you think there's any third option beyond those two
teams? A third
teams?
Team? Yeah. CBS. or Fox, if he doesn't want to get hit anymore. That's the third option.
I think it's crazy to keep playing personally.
So do I. If I'm
Jets and Buffalo are always going to be teams out, but he has no interest.
No, he's not going to the Jets. Buffalo would have been, I guess,
but Jerry could trade it to him and force his hand.
He could have, but I don't think he would do that. I don't think he would trade into a team where he didn't want to go.
The Jets are tanking. They're not going to get anybody that's any better than the guys that they have right now. Whether it's McCown or Petty or Hackenberg that plays.
But you know what Jerry Jones thinks, right? You know what he's waiting for? He's waiting for Teddy Bridgewater to happen all over again. Some team that thinks they're going to be good to rip up his knee and he can't play the rest of the year, I'm going to get a first and a fourth for Tony Romo.
Yeah,
guarantee you this is what he wants.
Yeah, which is why I don't see the harm in waiting right now. But, Houston, I think, Tony, you hit the nail on the head. Houston has no reason to not trade something right now. They have a wide open gaping hole at quarterback. Tom Savage, they know what they have in Tom Savage, and they don't have a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Neither team is as good as New England, even with Romo. But are they the second best team in the NFC? AFC by far with Romo?
Houston is the only one that gave the Pats. I mean, Atlanta obviously gave the Pats a run for their money, but Houston gave the Pats a run for their money. If Osweiler wasn't so terrible in that game, they could have won.
But you say that, here's the funniest thing.
They still won by 19 points.
Yeah, they won by 19. That was the funniest thing. The second funniest thing is they beat him by 20 with Jacoby Brissett early in the year, too.
Yeah. They shut him out.
it's
27-0, I think.
Like, so as far as that goes, and I've never seen the Patriots have an offseason like they did this year.
Well, Patriots are playing chess. Everyone's playing checkers. It's the
best offseason they've had. And after the 2006 season, I guess it was, they signed Moss and Welker. And they brought in another player then. But this is pretty crazy because if the Malcolm Butler thing does go down with the Saints, are going to end up getting their pick back?
Why hasn't that happened already? That was supposed to happen.
I don't think they're going to get their pick. I think they're playing hotball. I think they want the 12th pick. I think
they're not getting that.
Oh, yeah, they'll get it.
They're not getting that.
Then they'll get Malcolm Butler, though. They're not going to lose either way.
I don't know if I want to lose Malcolm Butler in today's game.
They just signed Gilmore. The only thing that's odd is the Pats, they do a lot of funky things in free agency. They'll let guys walk. They let Logan Ryan walk, Jabal Sheard. Those guys are gone. They signed Hightower because he's their guy. I haven't often seen them go crazy on a signing like they did with Gilmore. So they obviously think there's something significant there.
And I don't think Butler is as good as people think he is. Here's the reason. Here's the number one reason why I could tell why he's not as good as we think he is. He makes big plays.
Yeah.
If you're that good, you don't get the ability to make big plays because nobody throws.
Because no one throws
the
ball to you.
True.
So I think he's good, and I think he's done a great job. But I think they realize that he's not a $14 million cornerback that he's going to command next year.
Do you think Gilmore is?
From all indications, he is.
I mean, he's got a ton of talent, but he just hasn't lived up to it. It's just a little bit of a surprising signing to me. The Pats don't often break the bank for somebody like that. But they had room. They had money to spend, right? And the quarterback's perpetually taking a discount.
He's going to be working for minimum salary soon. I think we should get a GoFundMe page for Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah. He's I don't know what he's going to do. It's a shame. Poor
so
Tom.
What's going to happen when Revis is their third cornerback?
Yeah, you hear it. He's going probably going back there. Let me ask you this, though.
If they got it, if they get him, it's just they're so much better than everybody now after this offseason in the AFC. The Steelers
think
obviously
be better.
Can't beat them.
Tony, why? Assuming the reports are correct, do you agree with them not trading Garoppolo?
Yes.
They get number one right now. They could probably get Cleveland's 12 and more.
It depends. If they could get Cleveland's 12th pick, I would go ahead and do it. If I have a hard time believing those offers are true.
Me too.
If they can't get a number one, I don't think there's any problem keeping depth. I mean, he lost a quarterback.
But he's gone next year for nothing.
Right, but they don't care. I mean, they just toss people away like they're nothing. I mean,
it also might say speak a little bit to how they actually value him.
Yeah.
All right, so you Jimmy Garoppolo leaves, so just draft somebody else in the third round. Right? Like how much time have we spent talking about in our lives Kevin O'Connell and Matt Gutierrez and Ryan Mallett and Matt Castle?
Yeah, Ryan Mallett was
Brian
supposed to
Ryan Mallett was supposed to be good, thing, yeah. Right? He died.
Brian Hoyer. The only thing that is curious to me about all of it is that they have traded this player before, meaning the backup quarterback, in inflated value. And then traded him at the right time and got picks for
I'll
him.
I'll give you an interesting tidbit. Tom Brady's dad said that Tom Brady won't finish with the New England Patriots. He says that, hey, every time they've let guys go before the end of their career, and Tom wants to play till he's 45. He said there's no way that Belichick is going to let him play till 45.
I mean, if he keeps playing like this.
But think about it. If you're going with Tony's theory here.
Brady said it.
If you buy into that, this could be why they're not trading Garoppolo. Does that have a quarterback for the future? Brady, there wouldn't be a huge cap hit to let him
this
go.
This is my conspiracy theory that I floated like 6 weeks ago.
I don't believe this. I think I could see sort of where you're going with this because they do let players go, and maybe that's why they're doing these other moves, and maybe that's why they're building up everything else to go one more championship with Brady this season before it all breaks up. That's an interesting conspiracy
theory. The one thing about Garoppolo that is different from some of the other ones is they took him in the second round. Like, that's significant collateral spent in the NFL. The Patriots obviously are pretty fungible regarding players, but they took a second-round pick on a quarterback when they have the guy with the best resume of all time currently starting for them.
Didn't they take Brissett in the third round? Like, what were they doing all these quarterbacks? They have so many picks every year now. It matters.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they move all over the place through all these trades they're doing.
So my conspiracy theory was basically like, maybe they know something, and maybe Belichick and Brady walk at the same time. Now, it seems like there's been some stories out there like that's not happening. But how much longer is Belichick going to coach? Neither of the coordinators have taken jobs, which they could have, multiple times over McDaniels. Patricia was obviously in the mix this year on a couple of jobs. But they both like pulled themselves out of certain jobs, too, because they don't want to leave the comfort of home.
I think it's hard when you've done this one thing your whole life and you're afraid, like you don't know what you'll do after that. Like, everybody thinks retiring is a great thing.
I think Belichick's a coach.
I could see him not coaching, but he'd be like Bill Parcells and be the GM.
Like, what? Like to make the transition that Coughlin's
making,
right?
Well, yeah, but
he's the GM now.
But I don't feel. I think he wants to coach till he dies.
I kind of, but so did Tom Coughlin.
Parcells, though, did it, though, and he lost his mind and hated every coach that coached for him.
That's the hard thing. Isn't that what they always say about Barry Bonds can't be a hitting coach because hitting came easy to him. He doesn't understand why the people can't do it as well as he did. I think it's the same thing with coaches.
Parcells is one of the most difficult personalities in the history of the sport, so I can understand why he didn't like anybody. He fired Cam Cameron like the second he walked in the door, but the guy that had just gone 1-15, like Parcells understood that Cam Cameron doesn't have the skill set. By the way, guy's still not a head coach anywhere.
I watched one of the Patriots movies where they had on the NFL Network where they had the cameras there the whole year.
The 2009 season with Belichick.
Maybe. I don't know if it was 2009 because Patricia was part of it, so it wasn't there.
I think he was there 8 years ago.
So it was 2000, and it was amazing to me how much input he takes from his coaches. Because you would think Bill Belichick knows it all and everything, but he takes a lot of input from his coaches, and then he makes a decision.
It's hard to be in that inner circle, but once you gain his trust, he really values
McDaniel. I think is like him and McDaniel are tight, and he came back there because you could tell that their relationship, just from watching that, it's amazing.
And yeah, I mean, he left, let him go to another AFC team to become a head coach, and he allowed him back into the circle. So there's obviously a lot of trust there.
There was a funny part where Edelman threw a pass and it got picked off. And Belichick goes over to he goes, "Don't we have Tom Brady at quarterback? Can you do me a favor and just let Tom Brady throw the ball?" And then they got in the playoff game, and Belichick walks over and goes, "Let's call that play where Edelman throws the ball." And he goes, "Didn't you tell me only let Tom Brady throw the ball?" He goes, "Well, I've never been down 21 points." It was to the Ravens, 21 points in the third quarter in a playoff game.
So that was just a couple years ago.
Yeah, the 21 point where they were changing.
Pete Amendola, right?
The linemen were the
cheaters.
Yeah.
That's another.
So that was the game. So that was the game. He goes up to him, yeah, have him throw the ball. He goes, "Didn't you tell me only to allow Tom Brady to throw the ball?" He goes, "I've never been down 21 points in the third quarter."
It's a good point. So, all right, we'll be back, Mike, George, and Tony after this.
Nice. Now that
back on the Roto Experts in the morning show. Just talking about some shenanigans that happened in the studio on Friday night.
Yeah, it's right.
The Out of Bounds show.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us a PG rated version of what happened here?
What happens is we have this big glass thing, right? And I never knew what it would be like to be a zoo animal, but sometimes it appears we are.
Yeah, so to set the tone.
We're in the cage.
In Studio 34 in the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, we're in Midtown Manhattan. And basically, the studio is a man cave set up, but it's got ceiling-to-floor glass windows, and we look out upon a restaurant of everybody hanging out. We got the guys that are doing the NL-only Tout Wars draft, which starts in about 20 minutes. And then there's, frankly, people that stay in the hotel connected to the restaurant that are hanging out, eating their breakfast. And as it gets later into the day, Tony, people having some beverages at the bar. And during the Out of Bounds show, which is taped on Friday nights, things got a little crazy.
Yeah, things get crazy. So it's the weirdest thing. Like, I don't know, when you see guys working on the radio and TV, you all of a sudden decide that you want to, like, remove some piece of clothing to distract the people. But it's something that routinely happens, and it's something...
they can feel free to distract me.
They can do.
We'll try.
But do you think, like, Matt Lauer's dealing with this over in Rockefeller Center?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Never seen that.
We should... Well,
it had to happen.
We've got to get Matt out. Maybe Matt will come over and guest, and we'll figure this out.
We'll drive down 49th. You see the...
Yeah.
The broadcast going. It's had to have happened.
Yeah, I mean, CBS, Fox, they all have those situations. Yeah. We used to tape when we were on Sirius platform. We used to tape up near there. So maybe it has happened. I can't say I've seen it, but it happened here on Friday night, apparently.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, Lenny Melnick was out here, and he was trying to expose his genitals to us.
Yeah.
But we couldn't see through the glass.
Yeah. Yeah, thankfully.
Yeah,
thankfully, we have a buffer of like double thick paned glass, so that
that would be an image I would never be able to get out of my head ever.
Yeah, the show, and the network would shut down. So,
shut down.
So you got here Friday. You did your draft yesterday. Did you compete in any other drafts?
No, just the one.
Just the one. Got it. And was that in tandem with Chris Vaccaro? Or was it just all you?
No. Chris. He didn't do that one. They've done every other one.
He's doing one with Matt Modica.
He was ducking me
20 minutes. So how do you feel about your team versus everybody else in the league? I mean, everybody loves their team coming out of a draft. Were there certain guys that were like,
I got to be honest. This is the craziest thing ever. So it costs $1,350 to get in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And it's $75 event. So you're spending $1,400. There's three or four people that have no chance to win. Like, I don't know what they're doing. And I'm like, that's a lot of money, but I guess...
Is it lack of preparation, or is it just guys that are kind of happy to be there because they're competing against some other experts?
I don't get it. Like, yeah, some people...
Some of you are that, yeah.
They're, like, picking players that don't even have jobs. Like, I'm like, $1,400, you just took it and lit it on fire.
Yeah.
And it is crazy when you think about that and you go in that type of setting... And I think with an auction, it's a little different, too. So I was there a little early, so I saw the snake draft, and there were people, the same thing, there were three or four teams that were terrible. But I think the auction, people get a little nervous, and they don't have the experience in playing that, and they get behind in their money, or they spend too much money early, or they don't spend enough early, and they get a little rattled or a little left behind there. the snake draft, there shouldn't be any excuse to have that poor of a team.
Yeah, like from an auction perspective, you need reps in order to get good at it, right? Just like any other skill that you try to develop, if you're just going in like, ah, I played in a bunch of snake drafts, I'll just try this auction out, and you're going against some sharks, you're going to be in for it. Yeah.
Auctions, if you don't know what you're doing in an auction, auctions are tough. You can't just show up in an auction and go, hey, I'll be fine. It's just
not. Well, I read a couple of articles and I listened to Tony Sincotta for an hour.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Like, no, you got to be in this mix.
There's a lot of guys now, and I told this, and Engel didn't understand this.
Scott Engel, managing director of Roto Experts. He's the king. He is fantasy.
Yeah, he doesn't pay attention sometimes, but he's a Kiss good fan. Guy. He's a good guy. He's a Kiss fan. He doesn't
big Kiss fan.
He has Kiss makeup. Army. He has leather pants. Yeah. There's a lot of people using computer draft software now, and to me, I don't do it.
Me either,
because I can't keep up with it. Like, I can't input the stuff, and then look at the players, know what's going on in the room. But a lot of people do it, and I don't know if it's good or bad. For me,
because you're having to enter every pick in there, right?
Yeah, every pick. So then it'll give you the who you should bid on the next, and it'll give you the standings as you go along based on their projections and things like that. And a lot of people use them. A lot of people, like I was telling Scott that I said, Scott, pay attention, go around Tower Wars this weekend and see how many of these guys are using those. I could tell you right off that it's going to be at least 50%.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's crazy to me to be in there. And DFS, it's a big thing too. So more and more people are compiling these data sheets and driving their picks. And they go.
So what do you think that's... And you don't use it because...
I just can't keep up with it. Like, I know all the players... I mean, hell, I do this every day of my life, and I know the numbers, like I said, and I just write them down with a pencil and paper.
I wouldn't mind doing the software, but I'd probably have to do it in a draft that I don't care about as much first to make sure it doesn't screw me up, you know, putting everything where I don't miss something.
The perfect draft for that is the Draft Champions format, so they have the 8 hours to pick.
Exactly, yeah, we have all day. It doesn't make any difference.
And look, and you see what they suggest, and then you go and you research it there. But when you have a minute to pick or a minute and a half to pick, I don't know. And then, plus, you're putting a lot of weight into whoever's projecting.
Made these projections, right.
And you only get one site's projections when you put them, or your own. Hopefully, your own. I mean, hopefully you've set up. A lot of these applications allow you to put in the variables that spit out the data. And hopefully you're doing that and not just taking the thing.
You like the cheat sheet generator on RotoExperts.com?
I mean, I guess it's different when you're playing for $1,400, right? I guess it's a little different. But say you're playing with your friends, right? And it's like $50, $100, whatever. Are you going to tell me that that's enjoyable? These idiots out here in Tout Wars, right?
Free.
They're paying $150 to get in this thing. They can't win a damn dollar, and they're using a goddamn projections thing. I mean, that's fun.
I see what you're saying.
That's fun? I mean, how low of... self-esteem do they have that they can't even think on their own?
I usually go my own rankings. I mean, that we all have egos, which I find... That's why I find it strange you use someone else's projections. Generally, that's what we do.
I would hope these guys that are pros that are sitting to our left...
They must be
tweaking them. Using their own sites.
All right, I like all these guys, but I'm going to give you a little taste of what's cool.
Okay.
Say, take Rotowy, for instance, right? Jeff Erickson, Chris List, Derek Van Riper. And there's others there. But those are the three big names that are out here, and they're all using the same software. It's for all RotoWire software. You got the same picks.
So they're the same. I guess it could be a compilation of all their rankings.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that's what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess. But see,
and Liss and Erickson were in the same draft yesterday, the AL Towers draft.
So you're going at the same players. You're in the same draft. You're in the same software. I mean. I never mind asking questions. I've asked Tony questions on players, Scott. Yeah. Just get an idea. But
of course.
Bottom line is, I'm trusting what I think more.
Yeah.
You know, I think Tony's an idiot on this question.
In their defense, a player might pop up and they're like, no, I don't want that, you know, and go their own. And knowing Liss and Eric, that's probably what they do. But, and Mike, you can attest to this too. I mean, guys from DailyRoto.com. On Sundays during football season, we would get their picks, and it, like, for a couple years, I hate to throw them on the button, they throw them under too. Colin Kaepernick would be a guy they were always on. And we're like, what the hell is their fascination with Colin Kaepernick? And in fact, I asked Leone or Dinkman one day, I said, man, when are you guys going to be done with Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah. But they always would come back to the same thing. We like his floor. So you can get him at a discount, and we know because of the running, he'll be at 16 fantasy points by the end of the day. And there's upside for...
You're playing it safe in that way. Because you know what the floor is. You hope for the upside, but you know what the floor is. You're
almost like as a rule, I was like, I'm not listening to this. I'm not using Kaepernick. I'm going a different way. I'd rather play Fitzmagic than play Kaepernick. Fitzmagic had that one game a couple of years ago. He threw six touchdowns, and DeAndre Hopkins went nuts. It won me some money. So, in any event, I see what you're saying. You know, when I'm doing football too, I don't rely on any kind of cheat sheets or anything like that. I have stuff printed out in front of me, so I know which players are going. But even like I'm just in a rhythm. I do it so many times during the months of July and August. I have a sense of who I like and where I can get them, and I'm not going to overpay for people.
I have access to like five different optimizers that people use. Like people give it to me, I'll try this out, blah blah blah. So I look at them. Oh, I look up at them all, right? And I'm like, and then I go. So basically, what I do is I get up in the morning and I put together my own daily fantasy team each and every day. Mm-hmm. And then during the day, I research, and then I'll check these five things to see if they have any players I don't. And to me, it's baffling that people, and that's what's wrong with this industry. Is that people can go and just hit a button, put a lineup together, and then they bitch and complain when they don't win. They haven't done anything.
They didn't do any work.
And there are things out there. And I think that for the industry, it's bad, too. Because what happens is, like, I was in a tournament, golf tournament a couple weeks ago, where I did really well. There were 11 teams with the same lineup. And when I mean the same lineup, it wasn't the same six golfers. They had them listed in the same exact order,
too. Yeah, they just took it from the site.
They got it from somewhere. And it was crazy, and it's a bad thing for the industry. And I wish DraftKings and FanDuel would have some more emphasis over these providers to make the people pick half of their own lineup. So basically, what Roto Grinders does is you can go in and you can optimize a lineup, and their computer will spit it out, but you have to pick two players. So two of those players has to come from you picking, and then the thing will work. I think it should be at least four. There, and I don't think it's enough.
I still don't know what DraftKings or FanDuel could have, what kind of influence they could have over that.
Well, they pay RotoGrind is $1 million a year in referral fees.
Yeah.
I think they could have some influence.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, so we'll continue talking about this. We'll bring Cha-Cha in for the final segment as well. It's Mike, George, and Tony after this. Back with hour number three coming to a close. Tony's here. Chacha's going to be coming in here in a minute. George and I will
hide the children.
Yeah, George and I will be off air here in the next few minutes. But Tony's going to be on air basically all day. Chacha, I believe you're in. If you want to say hello to the crowd.
Good morning, crowd.
Yeah, so thank you for joining us.
All 20 of us. Yeah. How's everybody?
We're doing okay. Excited for the NL Tout Wars draft coming up. Tony, you seem very excited about it.
Yeah, I'm fired up about it.
Tony is fired up, man.
These guys, you know what? Would you like, if you came here.
You don't have to whisper. I mean, it's a live microphone going out to hopefully millions.
Would you like to bring your grandmother here to meet a guy? I mean, what's the average age sitting at that table?
I haven't gotten a full picture of today's participants.
Yesterday had to be 58, 59?
Yeah, it's mid-50s.
I don't know.
There had to be 120-year-old there, then it skewed everything up. Because
Nando brought it down.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Spohr wasn't in it. He's a young guy, but... he wasn't in that draft yesterday. He was in the mixed on the day before, but... in any event, yeah, it's a mature crowd.
It's a mature
crowd. Paul Spohr, of course, Fangraphs.com is one of the guys in the business. Absolutely, RotoWire. He writes up for a lot of people in the industry. But to be honest about Spohr, he's the guy that either doesn't date girls or goes to strip joints with sweatpants on. He's one or the other. I haven't figured it out yet.
He was wearing sweatpants yesterday.
So we might have our answer there.
He was wearing a helmet yesterday in this chair. If you guys seen it, I don't know if you did. It was on Twitter. He had actually wearing a helmet, sitting in this chair, and he was here for way too much, too long. Yeah, well, Paul, if you're out there, God bless you.
He was solid though. Gave us great info on.
Oh, he is good.
He crushed his draft.
Did he declare himself a winner of the draft like Jake Seeley likes to do?
I think he did. Yeah, pretty much. He was happy with his draft.
I don't know that he was that bold, but he, you know, he had a pretty interesting strategy. He went after hitters, and he had like it was an OBP league, so he had Votto and Stan.
Votto, Trout. Yeah. Did he have Stan? I don't think he had Stan.
No, it was
Arenado. Arenado, and he had one of the big,
Trout,
big name.
Votto, it was a lot of big name players, and he took some chances on pitching. But in any event, our buddy Nando DeFino yesterday, he was in the AL Tout Wars draft, and
maybe the last time
he targeted Twins, which is an interesting strategy. And we all know Nando. We all know Nando likes to. Okay, that was interesting. We just had somebody barge into the studio that don't know who they
room
are.
Room service?
It was interesting, though. So is that a compliment?
Yeah, I don't know.
Drinking already.
Yeah. I think this guy's got a beer in hand. It's 9:53 in the morning, but it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Okay. That's true. I wonder if he's part of Tout Wars.
He's going into the room there.
I think he was my Uber driver.
We might have to hire security during weekend events like this.
Somebody better talk to Cardano. This has got to happen.
Anyway, so Nando targeted Twins. I can't say that's a strategy that I would embrace, Tony.
No. They have some decent play. Like, the Park thing, so news came out yesterday. I don't know. It actually came out after their draft. Kenneth Vargas was injured, and Park's been on fire in spring training. So I got the information during the auction I was in, so I bid $2 on Park and not put a dollar out there so no one would jump out there, and knowing that the information. So it's always good to have your cell phone handy during drafts and auctions there. So Nando got a break there. You can look at a guy like Brian Dozier and the Twins you'd like. Miguel Sano, if you need power, especially in AL only. I mean, he's going to hit 30 home runs. The Twins are going nowhere. They're going to let him play, even if he strikes out 332 times there. So I'm not a guy that believes in Buxton, but people do. So they actually have more talent than people would think for the Minnesota Twins.
They can hit, just can't pitch.
No.
Barrios down.
They have Irvin Swerve and Santana as their opening day starter.
That's enough said right there.
Who else did they have?
Matt Modica likes Santana this year, though. He likes him
as a placeholder, a guy who's going to. Yeah. Let's not throw Matt under the bus. He thinks he's going to be Cy Young.
Santiago, Gibson, Hughes, Duffy. Those are some of the other guys in the rotation.
Philly Hughes still got a job.
Philly Hughes still working there. Santana was the ace, though, of the Dominican Republic.
Yes, he started the game that they lost to the U.S. in the semis.
Pretty much enough said there.
Which we started, I think Danny Duffy was the starter for the U.S. in that game, and then Stroman pitched the finals. Did you watch a lot of the WBC?
Oh, yeah, loved it.
It was exciting.
Now, did you watch it in the beginning, or did you get into it?
Oh, yeah, I was into it. I knew the first night we were good. You know how I knew is that I was like everybody else. Oh, this guy ain't playing. What the hell, right? Then I tune in, and Andrew McCutchen's hitting eighth. I'm like, this team got to be pretty good.
Yeah. Goldschmidt didn't even play that much.
Yeah.
Hosmer played over him.
Murphy didn't play that much.
Murphy didn't play at all. Murphy. Did you watch a lot of the WBC, Cha-Cha?
No, I enjoyed it. I mean, I talked to Tony about it. We loved it from the beginning. You know, people like Tony was saying, Harpo's not playing, Trout's not playing, so what?
The early returns from a lot of people in the industry that I'm following on social media were really positive, so it got me into it earlier than I might otherwise have been into it. But, I can't embrace the twin strategy, but WBC was a lot of fun. How about Danny Duffy? What are your thoughts for him this year?
I love him. Yeah. I actually, in another auction I did a week ago, I did. I had Darvish and Kershaw, and I was just there, and then Duffy was like $15. I said, you know what? I'm going to get a third one. And I grabbed him, and I think he's going to be lights out.
I'll take a $15 Duffy every league.
And Stroman, I think, went for $16 yesterday in the draft that we were tracking. So you like Stroman as well?
I like Duffy better.
Yeah.
I think Stroman, the strikeouts are not going to be there for Stroman. He's a successful pitcher. He gets it. He's a competitor. I just don't think he strikes out.
American League East, too. Toronto. I'd rather have Duffy.
Toronto, Camden Yards is also in that Yankee Stadium.
Fenway.
Yeah, so it's all hitters' ballparks in the American League East.
Yeah. You know, he tracked better as the season went on last year. But your thoughts, you know, Danny Duffy. So.
And then Stroman, you know, his stock went way up because people, if you're watching WBC, I think you can't, nothing but good things. You can, every game he pitched, he was, you know, did a great job.
Yeah. Well, that's it, folks. 3 hours up and 3 hours down. We're going to be continuing Tout Wars coverage all day today. We kind of wrap up, I guess, later in the day around 4 or 5 o'clock, right, Tony? You're basically here for the long haul.
I don't know. When they tell me to go home, I'm going to go home.
Yeah,
I'm going to Boston tonight for people up there.
Oh, very
so
nice.
If you're in Boston. And I just found out, you know what's crazy?
What?
Dan Strafford, who's on the show, the Fantasy Black Book.
Yeah.
He lives in the town that I grew up in.
Well, there you go.
Small world.
Wow.
I knew he was from Boston, the area.
Waltham, Mass.
Possibility? Yeah. Any double dating possibilities there?
He's married. I don't know if they're into that thing.
Different kind of arrangement altogether.
Different kind of double dating.
All right, guys.
I'll leave that.
Thanks for listening, folks. NL Tout Wars coverage will be up with Tony and Cha-Cha next
Thank
on
you.
Fantasy Bagels and Baseball.
This is wonderful.